And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hear that podcast growling, mean and angry. Hear those co-hosts shouting, it's Dana and Jay.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Hear That Podcast. Growlin', Paul Ehner Jr. and Jay Morrison of The Athletic. Excited to be with you on a Thursday as we preview Bengals at Bucks. We prepare for our nice December trip to sunny Florida. Good weekend for us, Jay.
It's supposed to be 60 and raining in Tampa on Saturday. I feel like we're getting the short stick there, but still better than here.
Much better than here, and I'll take anything. I want to see the water. Yeah. I want to consider shorts. That's all. That's where it's at. That's all I need. There was actual blue sky for about an hour this morning, and it was like, whoa, Where am I? It was very off-putting. I need, you know, the 2 weeks of straight gray had pretty much like become the new normal. But this will not be gray. We're going to very sunny, happy place, Tampa, Florida, this weekend. Burrow, Brady, Bengals, Bucks. Bengals trying to get to double-digit wins for the second straight season. A lot on the line, of course. We're going to talk about all of that and more. We have a bunch of news. Injuries are kind of the news of the week. We're going to continue to update and follow those. I'm going to talk about a story that I put out today, a big project I've been working on for a while on Joe Burrow and the back shoulder. Now, those of you that listen to this podcast have heard about this before. If you remember, this first sparked way back when we had JT O'Sullivan on this podcast, who does incredible work at the QB school. And he pointed out that he may be the best to ever do this. From that point forward, I started asking everybody I could possibly ask about that concept, and it unearthed all kinds of stuff. So we'll talk a little bit about more of that and bring you Joe Burrow's very insightful answers when I asked him about that concept. We're going to bring in our good friend Mo Egger. I'm going to make him do the worst radio trope ever just because I like to torture him. We'll have our three downs in 40 seconds. We'll have our fictional bets. We're going to cover a lot of ground with Mo today, Jay. And then we'll have all of our, we'll discuss the game, Bengals, Bucks, get into the logistics of that. We'll have Arby's, growler bet, run, pass, or boot, predictions. And then at the end, the finale was last night, Jay. Survivor talk. The four of you that love hearing us talk Survivor are going to love this. The very end. Survivor talk, spoiler alert, will be happening. I know you're excited for that. Yeah, I'm looking at you, Stan. That's right. Okay.
It's up to five now. Bengals PR, Emily, yeah, she's
shout out Emily on board. That's right. That's right. She has binged the season. She was ready for the finale so she could listen to us talk about it. That's how, in my head, that's what it is. Yeah. All right. Let's run down the news here, Jay. The news is starting with the injury. I'm just going to start with the injury report. We're just going to roll on down this thing. Two not injury related for rest did not participate on Wednesday. That's Lael Collins and DJ Reader. So no concern there. Otherwise, we have Hayden Hurst with the calf. Doubtful, as we said. Doesn't look like he's going to play on Sunday. Both slot corners, Mike Hilton and Jalen Davis, did not participate. Trey Hendrickson, with that wrist, quote, issue, did not participate. The Trey Hendrickson thing, obviously, I don't think he's going to play this weekend. There seems to be an idea that they're leaving that door open, I assume, just to keep people guessing. There's no reason to do otherwise. But we're going to see. We've talked, you know, Jay, you and I talked to a bunch of people about what comes next now. No Trey Hendrickson. He's obviously such a dominant player for them off the edge. Where does it go next?
Yeah, and I mean, it's going to come down, you would think, to Cam Sample and Joseph Osai, and it's kind of a full circle moment for Joseph Osai where his first game as a pro, the preseason game in Tampa, where he has that incredible night and then suffers a season-ending injury and loses his whole rookie year. It feels like it would be Joseph Osai, but if you look at it, and Cam Sample's actually been getting more snaps than Joseph Osai, but when you talk about rushing off of that right side that Trey Hendrickson comes off of, Osai's had more snaps over there. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they play that. You know, they've used Osai inside a little bit. I think you're going to see a lot of both of them trying to get some production over there, because they're going to have opportunities. The Buccaneers, Tristan Wirfs, Pro Football Focus, number two rated offensive tackle, doesn't look like he's going to play. So there's going to be chances, you would think. The rest of that Tampa Bay O-line is pretty strong, but Osai and Sample, whoever is in there, are going to be going against a backup. And yeah, Brady likes to get it out quick, but that offense is struggling. He may be tapping the ball a little bit longer. They're going to have some chances to at least get pressure, if not sacks.
Definitely get pressure. I mean, their line has struggled for long stretches. I mean, you know, it started when they lost Kappa and Jensen right off the jump, right? Mm-hmm. You know, with Kappa here and Jensen to the injury right before the season even got going. They've had all kinds of problems on the other side. There's going to be opportunities, certainly, for the Bengals to get after him. You know, talking to Osai yesterday, and someone brought up, like, you know, next man up mentality, and Joseph Osai stopped. He said, stop. He said, Cam Sample's next man up. He said, respect, you know, it was something to the effect of, you know, respect his name now. Cam Sample's the next man up. And so if that gives you an indication of at least where Joseph was kind of saying that, I would expect to see, you know, Cam, to me, I think they're a combo play here. Cam Sample is more of your Sam Hubbard type, right? He is more of your, he probably can specialize more. In the run stuff, that's why he's a kick inside guy. So base downs, early downs, maybe you would have Sample, and then more pass rushing situations, you would shift over to Joseph Osai, and they can try to combo that fill in for Trey Hendrickson. That's probably the most likely scenario. Maybe they sprinkle in a Jeff Gunter if Osai needs rest, because he is also on the injury report and limited yesterday with the shoulder. You know, he said it's something that he kind of dealt with. It wasn't like a pop back in situation, but it is, you know, something that he's had to work through a little bit.
Yeah, and it didn't look good when he came off the field, and he was in the blue tent for a really long time, and it was a good sign that he was at least there in a limited capacity yesterday. But again, that kind of lends to what you were saying. Even if he was healthy, I think you still might see the Sample on the base downs, and then Osai just being a third down specialist. And you especially think that they're going to want to try to lighten his load a little bit, just take it easy on that shoulder for another week.
And so a funny story about being in the blue tent for so long, as you mentioned, I talked to him about that. I said, do you own the record now for longest time in the blue tent? And he said, well, yeah, I was in there for a while, but it's because it wasn't because they were doing anything specifically to him. They were putting a harness on him, but it had to connect in a certain way to his shoulder pad, and the shoulder pads didn't have the holes that they needed. So they had to drill through his shoulder pads in order to create the holes himself that he needed on the spot. So it was like a pit stop, you know, like he's here getting like, exactly. And so he got pit stopped while he was inside the blue tent. And that's why it took so long. It wasn't an efficient pit stop like some of the NASCAR crews do. But anyway, it was kind of a funny story about why he was in there so long. But we'll see how he does as far as how he plays. You know, the Hilton Jalen Davis thing, we'll have to see how that plays out. Hilton with a knee, Davis with a thumb. Man, these fingers. It's the extremities this year have been problematic. Hilton, of course, had surgery, missed the game with his finger. Now Davis has a thumb. Of course, Tyler Boyd has a finger. So we'll see if they come back. Otherwise, the slot corner spot would have to switch to Dax Hill, you would think, at that point, who hasn't even repped it in practice.
Yeah. The curious thing was I saw Jalen Davis walking into practice, into the bubble, or into the indoor facility on Wednesday, and he was wearing a sling, and I thought it was more I've never seen a guy wear a sling for a thumb injury, but that's concerning. I wonder about Mike Hilton, because he came back in that game and he played well. He did say that he thought it was serious at first, but they got it loosened up and got him back in there. He felt much better. He was at practice, which is a good sign that he wasn't doing rehab somewhere. It was more just a situation with rest. And I think it seems like there's a good chance that he could be back this week. You would think if it was a long shot, he would not have been there kind of the way Trey Hendrickson was not there at all yesterday.
So Tyler Boyd, limited participant. He kind of talked about, look, it's a finger, I'm playing. We'll see on that. I mean, but he's obviously very confident in himself. Good for him. Interesting, though, you asked Brian Callahan about this yesterday, Jay, and, you know, let's bring in his response here when talking about the concept of a receiver playing with the finger and what it could mean for Tyler Boyd.
So when you have a guy like TB, whenever he can come back and play through this, how much concern is there? Because he operates in the middle of the field, and a ball that goes off of his hands is probably going to be a pick. How much concern is there with that?
There's always concern with receivers and extremity injuries, you know, just because you can get by as a defensive player and not have to use your hand a lot and not have to, you know, if you don't have to catch the ball, it's not a requirement of the job. For defensive players, usually you'd like them to catch it, but sometimes they don't.
Yeah.
But yeah, anytime you're dealing with hand injuries or receivers, it's always a little bit concerning on can they effectively do it under contact, under duress. Is a guy's trying to play through his hands? Is he going to be able to be as strong to the catch point? Can he secure the ball? Those things are all questions we're going to have to answer over the course of the week for him. It's always anytime that you have hands, wrists, anything where you're trying to catch the ball, it impacts those guys a whole lot more than it would an offensive lineman or a defensive back. It's just that's how they make their money, is catching the football. And anytime you have injury, there is going to be a concern until you see otherwise.
Are all fingers equal? If you're trying to catch a ball, is there one that's more?
That's a great question. That's probably a better question for them. I would say there's probably some you can get by without, or not as prominent, but. I still think any time you got hand in, because the way you have to catch and guys playing through your hands, that's always a concern.
I mean, it's all good points there, Jay. I mean, it's a hard thing to do.
It is. I mean, you could talk about pain tolerance all you want, but when that pass hits you, it can, if the grip isn't 100%, that ball can bounce off your hands, stings a little bit, and a pass that goes up in the air in the middle of the field usually gets picked off. So as he said, you can't adjust and have it be more of a into the body and kind of cradle the catch. You've got to get your hands out there and get them on the ball. So we'll see. I'm sure he is saying, it's a finger, I'm going to play. But I think you have to wonder what that's going to look like, if his grip's going to be strong enough and pain tolerance to be ready to play is different from pain tolerance from a rifled pass from Joe Burrow hitting you in that finger.
Yep. Three others with hamstrings: Dax Hill, T. Higgins, Trent Taylor. Those were all limited. And then nobody wants to see Joe Burrow show up on the injury report, which he did. But it was a full participant, right elbow, but full participant. So just my elbow's a little sore. Okay, we have to list you. Mm-hmm. Is the assumption of where that is. But still, is that the first time we've seen him on the injury report all year, Jay?
I think it is.
Compared to last year, where every week, and it was something different. Pinkies and throats and knees and you name it. This year, first time he shows up here is in mid-December, almost Christmas. Bengals fans certainly taking that, but all things appear well with Burrow. There doesn't appear to be an issue there.
No, and that, I mean, that's what that would be a serious thing. And we've seen him play through other injuries, but playing through a right elbow, if it is serious, that would be hard to do.
All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Just to kind of, I want to tie a bow around a topic that has kind of floated around this week, and that was the Jermaine Pratt tweets, right? Mm-hmm. You went up and just to kind of clarify and talk to Jermaine about that. What did he have to say?
At first, nothing. I went up to him. He was on his phone. I was like, hey, you got a second? And he's like, yeah. I said, I just wanted to check in with you about your tweet. And he just stared at me. He didn't say anything. And I was like, you know the one I'm talking about, right? And he just stared at me. He didn't say anything. And I said, I just want to make sure, you know, sometimes you guys tweet stuff and we think it means one thing and it actually means something else. And, you know, what did you mean by that tweet? And he said it was what he said. I want to play third down. That's my mindset. I'm a three-down linebacker. I want to play. I'm not too worried about the money. The bag's going to chase you if you do what you need to do. It's more about opportunity. And I love that. That is such a great line. The bag's going to chase you. And I asked him also, you know, what was the coach's reaction? What did they say to you about it? He said they didn't say nothing. So, you know, we talked to Lou Anarumo about it on Monday. He said he likes that attitude. I'm sure they would wish it wasn't put out there publicly on social media, but it doesn't sound like it's anything that's, you know, going to be a riff or going to be an issue going forward. It's just a guy that, like most guys, wants to play more, wants to be on the field every snap.
Doesn't like that he's not playing third down.
Yeah.
Because it's costing him money, because the bag isn't chasing him as hard if he's not a three-down yeah. linebacker. That's exactly what he's saying. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's fine. That's fine. That's cool that he feels that way. That fire's great. Like Lou Anarumo said, no problem with it. But that is what he's saying. Mm-hmm. Let's not pretend. I think everybody wants to be soft with it. Like, he's just saying he just wants to get turnovers. No, he's saying it's costing him money that they're not playing on third down. And he wants to play. He feels like he should be playing on third down. That's fine. It's totally cool. But that's what he's saying. And that's what he said to you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I mean, he has played really, really well.
Yes.
But I mean, they what they've got is working on defense, and it is about the rotation. And it'll be interesting to see if we see an uptick in third down snaps from him this week.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on it. The other part of the news that I want to talk about from Wednesday, we talked to Joe Burrow for a little bit more, and you'll hear from him on my topic on the back shoulder in a minute. But first, there's obviously a lot of questions about Tom Brady and Brady versus Burrow and things like that. And I thought Burrow was great on this. Like, I enjoyed it. Of how many ways can I shut down this topic? but he did it in a very casual way of, The line that I love is, I'm Joe, he's Tom, you know? And that's the extent, like, he doesn't really like the comparison. So I'm sure he loved our piece where everyone compared them. but it was to the point of him saying, you know, I feel like I'm a lot of different people. Yeah, those traits that Kevin Falk and Andrew Whitworth and Ted Karras and Alex Kappa and Lou Anarumo and all those people that we talked to talked about that knew him, those are real. Those are real things that connect him to Joe Burrow. But so is his, you know, spontaneous playmaking that can be like Josh Allen, or his, you know, ability to throw the back shoulder like Drew Brees, or his ability to do a lot of different things. And that was his point. I pull from a lot of different areas, and I feel like I'm Joe, right? And so everybody always wants to paint you into something else. And, you know, if there's one thing we know about him, you know, he's very much a one of one type in many different respects. And I think that's kind of was his point. There would be no jersey swaps. There will be no autographs. There will be no starstruckedness, if you will. That was very clear, is that this is just another week and he's just another quarterback I'm going against. He loved watching him. He loves watching great quarterback play. He just doesn't want him to play well against them.
You know, the interesting thing is you say there'll be no jersey swap. I mean, it won't be initiated by Burrow. What if Brady asked him? What if Brady has that much respect for
interesting turn, plot twist?
I mean, if he plays a great game and Brady's got to see the writing on the wall, he knows he's at the end of his career and he sees Joe as an up and comer. I would not put that past him. And maybe Tom does it on the side, like, you know, when they like whisper in their ear a little bit so that all the cameras can't get everything and they don't do it right there on the field. But he says, I would like to get your jersey. Can you send it to me when you get back to Cincinnati?
Maybe in the tunnel or maybe a text.
Yeah,
for a jersey swap. I don't think there would be any. The mics that are around everywhere, that would be a text situation. Burrow says, I'm not into jersey swaps. I'm going to do jersey swaps. So I'd be curious. I wish I would have had that follow-up, because I did ask him that. I wish I would have had that follow-up. I didn't think about it. What if Brady went the other way? So I thought that was interesting. I have to share this. Jamar Chase was asked. James Rapine had a great question asking him about, if he – comparisons between Burrow and Brady, and Chase just says, you know, I heard stories of Brady going off on people. Joe don't do that. He said, well, what if he did? He said, I'd be pissed. He's like, Joe, you know, and that's the point, is that's, and I think that's part of Joe's point too, right? Like, I'm very different in some ways. Like, I'm the same in some ways. I'm different in some ways. It's all, you know, no more athletic pieces on how I'm like, I'm like Tom Brady from Joe Burrow.
Well, even in your piece on the back shoulder, where I think it was Dan Pitcher that was talking about how if a guy does something wrong on a route in practice, Joe will just pull him aside and say, hey, I was expecting this, you did that. And he's talking through everything. It's not a got to do it this way. It's more of a conversation than a command.
Exactly. Which is great. Let's talk about it. So, I spent a bunch of time on this. If I mentioned earlier at the top of the show, I mean, if you heard JT O'Sullivan, when we had him on about a month and plus ago, he said that, and we talked about why, he had seen that, and it really sparked this idea. I mean, then I was like, you're right. He might be the best at this. And so I wanted to kind of talk to people that knew about who have been the best. How did he get good at it? Why, and how is he able to do it to everyone? You know, that was one thing that JT said. He's like, I see him throw him to running backs. I don't think I've ever seen anyone do that. Like, this is not something that even the best that have ever done it do. I mean, when people talk about the greatest that have done this, Drew Brees is a name that always comes to mind. Aaron Rodgers with Devontae Adams were absolutely incredible at it. But you know, that was, and Aaron could do it with others, obviously, but they had a special connection. It wasn't the whole team. What's made Burrow so good is he does it with everybody. He finds a way to do it he's thrown one in a big spot to Hayden Hurst, to Trenton Irwin, to T. Higgins, to Jamar Chase a million times, to Chris Evans, to Joe Mixon. Everybody has gotten those, and he's worked on it with almost everybody. He's put time and effort into it. And it's really become a secret weapon for him. Here's why I really like, as I talk to people Jay, here's why I ended up really liking this project for reasons other than I thought I would. As I talked to more people, I understood how this throw is such a perfect illustration of Joe Burrow's elite traits. Not the beauty and aesthetics of throwing it, the accuracy and anticipation that he obviously has, and those are obviously his strong suits, his timing, all that stuff. But the value he places on trust, the value he places on preparation, the value that he places on communication and building relationships with his receivers is at the absolute core of how this route succeeds. You have to have that. He said yesterday, this is the ultimate trust route. And that's why it's perfect for Burrow, because that stuff matters to him. He thrives at creating that. He knows how to do it. You mentioned it, Joe. And Pitts said that. He's just got a great way of communicating between reps in the film room. So, guys, there's no gray. Guys know exactly what to do, when to peek back at 10 yards on the conversion route, when to know what even is, what a panicked run is, what a back hip is, what it has to feel like, where it has to go to different guys. And like building that is really been one of his pet projects since he got here. He brought it. Like, that's the crazy thing. Like Brian Callahan said, this is not something I've ever done like this. He brought it from LSU because he came in and he said he wanted to have these answers. He loved the way he had done it with Chase and the way that had that chemistry turned into this thing he could always go to for an answer when he didn't maybe necessarily have anything else. That's why I liked it, because I think it illustrates, you know, what it means to Burrow to play quarterback and build, you know, a chemistry with the people he's playing with, particularly in the passing game.
The crazy thing is, why don't other quarterbacks do this? I mean, as everybody said, it's indefensible, and that's the whole point of training camp and going through a season, and you build the chemistry with these guys. I mean, is that the trust, the execution, is it that difficult that other people just don't work on it as much? Or now does Burrow become a trendsetter and we start seeing a whole lot more of these? I mean, everybody does it, but not to the extent that Burrow does it. And it could end up being his signature, I don't know if you say throw or move or just the defining part of his game. If other people are going to start following that and trying to do it more often, because he does it so much and with so many different people, and it's such a part of the offense. And you see what this offense has become and how well it's worked, and it's a copycat league. And is it that hard? Why aren't other people jumping on board?
Well, the answer to that part, I think, is simple, is that he is so accurate. Mm. And just not everybody has that ability to be accurate. And then, you know, something that Pitch also said was to be accurate in different ways. And to be able at the last second, Pitch is talking to me about it. He's doing it. He's like, he's got his hand in the air, and he's like, and you can be here back around your ear in the throw. And then at the last second, pull the finger just down a little bit to get it just to the spot for this guy or for that guy. And he is a master at that, to be that just tiny accuracy. And he said it himself, completion percentage, I should lead the league in it every year. I feel like I'm the most accurate quarterback in the NFL. And he is. And that's what, because you have to have there's because a screw up, a ball left a little inside, is a pick. A ball left a little inside is throwing it right to the DB. A ball that doesn't have the proper spot it's a low percentage throw. It's only a high percentage throw when you have timing, chemistry, and specifically accuracy. And just not everybody has that skill like Burrow has it. And I think that's why not everyone does it. And that's why some of the ones that you see that have been so good at it are what? Also the leaders in completion percentage are also, you know, that's just who they are as players. And it's a weapon that he has that not necessarily everybody does for that reason.
Yeah, I mean, Breeze, Rodgers, the ones that are good at it are they're precise Mahomes. Throwers.
And Mahomes is one, too, and certainly can do it. And it was interesting. I was sort of talking with Lou Anarumo about it, and he's like, you know, in a lot of ways, yes, it's indefensible with the way Burrow does it. Like you, when he's doing it the way he does it, like there is nothing you can do. It's philosophical. As a defensive coordinator, you either teach worry about it or don't worry about it. Like if they're going to take the, if you just got to give them the first down, basically don't give up the go ball. Because if you start playing for the back shoulder, that's when Jamar's over top of you.
Yep.
Or T. And that's the point. That's what makes, you know, how many go balls have this team connected on over the last 2 years? How much is that a big weapon for them? It's huge. The threat of somebody who's thinking about the back shoulder, even for a step, can be the difference between a touchdown to Jamar down the line or T down the line or not. And so it's, you know, it's philosophical. You just got to say, stay even. Don't worry about the back shoulder. If they throw and hit you back on shoulder, tip your cap kind of thing.
And you mentioned it in the lead of your story too, where you always see the DB walking back, just hanging their head, ripping their mouthpiece out, upset. And it's nothing they can do, but these guys are proud. And they if you hit that a couple times, they want to try to defend it. And like you said, start cheating on that, and it's over the top.
So I want to bring you Burrow talking about it. This was my conversation with him about it on Wednesday. Just kind of digging into some of the details. If you, the full, there's obviously a ton more in the full story. I recommend you going. I hope you go and enjoy it. I certainly enjoyed putting it together, talking to everybody about this. So I hope you go read it. But here's Joe Burrow talking about how he's become so good at the back shoulder.
Many people have suggested to me that you might be the best back shoulder thrower ever. Why do you think that you are so good at that specific throw?
Well, I think our receivers are really good at understanding the type of throw that's going to be thrown depending on what the defense is getting us. You know, that's not a route that you go out there and you're like, this is going to be a back shoulder throw. It just depends on the kind of leverage that you're seeing from the defenders. And so we got really good receivers at doing that. They have great body control. And, you know, if we throw it on time and to the right spot, it's really not a defendable route, in my opinion. So it's just something that we've worked really hard on and put a lot of emphasis on, and it's showing up on tape.
Where did you kind of first come up with the idea that you have a knack for this? Because, I mean, Callie was saying that you kind of brought that here from LSU with you. Where did you kind of first realize, I might have a knack for this?
Well, you know, when you come into the league, you got to figure out how to make throws work. You know, not everything, you know, in college you're going to have guys open, a lot of zone coverage, you're seeing the same defense, you know, basically the whole game. When you come into the league and, you know, they're mixing up coverages and, you know, the defenders are, there's a lot of tight windows, so you have to figure out how to find completions, really. And so as a quarterback, you got to learn how to make different kinds of throws and understand when those throws need to be made against certain leverages and different coverages. And you know, that's one of those that we came up with to kind of combat that.
Did you ever watch Drew Brees do it? He was really good at it. I don't know, you fan.
Yeah. I mean, he's one of the best.
Jamar said that he can recall one time you guys weren't on the same page. One time. He said it was against Cleveland last year. Do you remember that? Are there others that you maybe weren't on the same page with Jamar? Or is it just the one?
There's some every now and then. Usually, you know, one a year, maybe.
One a year?
Yeah.
Is there a favorite or most memorable one of those that you've thrown that stands out to you that was, you know, or is it just kind of...
There's been so many of them, and, you know, really, my favorite ones are the ones that, you know, probably the one to Trenton Irwin is my favorite against Tennessee.
Really?
Just because, you know, me and Jamar work on it so much, me and T work on it so much, and then, you know, me and Trenton had it, you know, we had that rep, and during the week in practice, and we hit it in practice, and so that was the one rep that we got of it, and it shows up in a big time situation against the Titans on the road to really win the game. We scored a touchdown in the next play, so that one was fun.
Is that big for trust for you? Like, is that where you that throw specifically, you feel like you can really develop a trust in your receivers as you get to know them, like a guy like Trent or like Aiden when he first got your 8-1 against Baltimore.
Yep.
Is that big for you?
Yeah, that's the ultimate trust route, because you're throwing it expecting that they see the same thing that you see, because we're getting it out so fast. You know, they got to get their eyes around understanding the leverage of the corner that they're going up against. And, you know, if they beat him over top, it's going over top. Mm-hmm. And so it's really – you really have to be on the same page, and we've got the guys that understand what we're trying to do.
All right, that was Joe Burrow. I love him kind of confirming what Jamar said. Jamar says it only one time on the back shoulder, split-second decision. And I love, like, full Jamar quotes where he's always calling me bro.
Yeah.
And so, but he's like, bro, I've been doing this for 7 years playing football. It's 0.2 seconds, bro. And so I there's so many things about Jamar I just love. He's just a great dude to talk to. But him saying, look, once that he can remember that he didn't feel like he was on the same page where Burrow threw it deep and Chase expected the back shoulders last year against Cleveland. So I asking Burrow, is that right? Is he on that? He's like, something like that, once a year. I mean, can you imagine a throw that's that hard to be on the same page with somebody to say, yeah, once a year we miss? Love that. Love that from Joe and from Jamar. So anyway, that story is up on the site. You can go check that out. It's in Twitter. And just go to theathletic.com/Bengals.
All right, let's just take a quick break.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, let's bring in our good friend Mo Egger. What's going on, Mo?
How we doing, guys? What's happening?
Doing great.
Not too much. Thank you for altering your schedule. Is it weird for us to talk on a Thursday? We're Tuesday people.
Yeah, no, today's not weird. Tuesday was weird. There was this huge hole in my life, and so at 10:30 on Tuesday, actually, I just went out and got pancakes. I'm not going to lie. I was sitting there at 10:15. I'm like, you know what? I got some extra time. I'm hungry. Pancakes. Let's go.
Actually, quite enjoyable, I'm sure, and you have now canceled all future visits to this show.
Well, no. I might just do this from the place that I get pancakes from.
Okay.
Aren't pancakes the easiest breakfast food to make? Why do you go out and get them?
Because I'm lazy.
I disagree. The amount of dishes that making pancakes causes, you've got the mixing bowl, you've got the griddle if you're using a griddle, you got the spatulas. I feel like it makes easy to me is no dishes.
Yeah. I mean, if the option is, and I make good pancakes, I make the pancakes or someone makes the pancakes for me, that's usually a pretty easy call. Now, you can't do it all the time because somebody making pancakes for you costs money, but on the rare occasion that I've got some extra time, I was really hungry. I didn't feel like cooking, didn't feel like doing dishes, pancakes. Plus, I'm home by myself. Whenever I cook anything remotely elaborate, I don't clean up as well as I should, or at least to my wife's standard. So then it becomes a discussion. And so, yeah,
we're okay. Been there.
I'm not here to give free promotion, but I will. I don't know what your pancake place is, but Sugar and Spice. Have you been to Sugar and Spice?
Phenomenal. Both locations. Yes.
Yes. Great spot to go to. It's like a big treat. When my house goes there, it's like Christmas for them.
Deal.
They love it. Yeah, it is a big deal. That's enough free promotion for them. Let's move on. So Can I just, before we get started, I want to ask you about the I Heart Christmas party. Was it? Did they bring in a magician?
Oh yeah,
real magician.
A real magician. Keith Moeller is his name. They brought in a magician, and he performed a magic trick on the air, which is great radio. We did do video. It's not the greatest, but I did do some video. It's on my Instagram, and then we did podcast the audio. But we had a magician, and it was. It's the iHeartMedia client Christmas party. This isn't for us.
No,
this isn't for the employees. It's for our clients. And so we had a magician for our clients.
Do you guys get one? Is there a second Christmas party?
With a mime?
I wouldn't go to that. Oh man.
Downgrade, yeah.
There will be an unofficial iHeartMedia Christmas gathering. I don't think is going to be sanctioned by the company, and it certainly won't be paid for by the company. But yes, we have, there's going to be, now how many people show up? I think it might be me and two other dudes, but we've made most of our coworkers aware of, I'll just say this. There's an establishment that two of my buddies that I work with and I go on the West Side on Thursday nights. We go every Thursday, watch Thursday night football. And we've invited everybody we work with to come join us next Thursday. So maybe they will, they probably won't. But as far as I'm concerned, that is the unofficial iHeartMedia Christmas party.
Well, then there'll be no magicians, which is sad. Or maybe there will be.
I might ask this guy to go. Keith Moeller, I got his website, I have his card somewhere. I might ask.
If I could just have some magician that just hangs out near me and does tricks at my command, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, my main thing for him was I wanted to know why magicians are always so well-dressed. Like magicians are always dressed like they're going to court. You never see a magician dressed like me, right? There's never a guy in a short and, you know, shorts and a pair of shorts and a t-shirt and, you know, sneakers and a ball cap doing tricks. He's always very immaculately dressed, including our guy Keith Moeller.
Should be wearing a hoodie and a hat like the three of us all are right now indoors. Yeah, look at us go. So I have this I like really the worst ideas I can come up with in the Christmas season. And in your business, there is very few things lower and worse than the trope of give a gift to local sports team, right? Yeah, yeah. I do this just to torment you. This is how I give gifts. I'm gonna make you give a gift to the Cincinnati Bengals, Mo. What would you like to give them for Christmas?
To the team as a whole? Like to everybody?
You give a gift to anybody. You give one it to that the they Bengals. Share? You can give a gift to a player. You can give anything you want. Money is no object.
Can I give money? Can I give cash? Can
just
I
a gift can card I do that? To just a gift card to Best Buy?
Okay. So I'll do a couple here off the top of my head. I'm going to give Lou Anarumo a head coaching job because I feel like he deserves it.
There you go.
If you look at the AFC West, there could be three teams looking for head coaches depending on how things unfold. I don't know that the Chargers would or should move on from Brandon Staley, but it sort of feels like the dude in Denver and Josh McDaniels in Vegas are both on shaky footing. And so, I mean, to me, if I'm an owner of one of those teams, I want the guy who has the antidote to Patrick Mahomes. That has been Lou Anarumo. And so obviously the Bengals would have to deal with that, but also to a degree, I think it'd be interesting to see, you know, we've talked about how well run the Bengals are. Well, to me, the real test of how good your organization is and sustainability is how you handle attrition. That means players who leave and it means coaches who leave. And, you know, I watched the Bengals do this in 2014 and 15, right? They lost Hugh Jackson. They lost Mike Zimmer. And over the next two seasons, they won 22 games. So I at some point, this franchise is going to be tested by that. But more than anything, I've watched a defensive coordinator who, for my money, has turned into one of the league's best. He's done great work here. So I'm gifting him a head coaching job. I'm gifting Jesse Bates the sort of free agent deal he seeks. He's played well. In recent weeks, it certainly doesn't I don't want to revisit the whole Jesse Bates franchise tag. I don't think any of us do, but I'd love to see him get what he desires and prove that he's worth that kind of deal. So I would certainly like to have that happen for him. What else? Who else should we be giving gifts to?
Do you have
to
any
him?
Gifts? Do you have any gifts, Jay? Do you want to give a gift?
Yeah.
Well, how about this? I'll have one, and then you guys decide whether the Bengals should take it.
Okay.
Regift it.
Ooh.
Or
ooh.
Return it. And I would ooh. Give them a time machine to go back and start the season over, because you think, knowing what they know now, they would have a very good chance to win week one, week two. This looks totally different. But then you have the variable. You don't know. Are there going to be more injuries? Or are there going to be other things that happen? Should they be happy where they are right now, 9-4, or would a complete do-over be something that they should be interested in?
Where do you buy a time machine?
Well, okay, this is all hypothetical.
Okay. Oh, didn't know. Because I can be honest with you, if time machines are available, I'm not really interested in football at all. There's lots of other things.
You can take the time machine and you can push it over the Clint Eastwood ravine. I think for me, I don't want it. If I'm the Bengals, I don't want it at all. I'm very happy with where you're at and where you sit and how the team is currently constructed and where I think this is ideal. You'd love to have had that week one, right? I mean, you'd love for the chip shot or the PAT to have gone through, and you feel that much more different at 10-3, one game lead, all that stuff. But it didn't happen. You learned from it, and they're in a good place. I don't think you want to change anything right now.
I wouldn't change a thing. Yes, would love to have won week one, would love to have won week two. Certainly you would love to be 13-0, but if you're telling me I can go back and then I don't know how things unfold from there, I love how this team is currently constructed. I like how they're playing, and they're reasonably healthy for this time of year. Obviously, you know, they've got to get Trey Hendrickson back, and there's been some questions about the health of the wide receivers, but their depth has been tested time and again, and this team keeps passing that test. I wouldn't sign up for a do-over at all. Give me where they are right now. If you would have, you know, we always do like, well, what if I would have told you back then? If you would have told me after the Pittsburgh game, they're only going to lose three more times. They're going to go into the final four games with a 5-game winning streak. Every offensive lineman will have posted. They'll have had no significant injuries there. Here's what the health status of this team is going to be. They're going to be going into the last 4 weeks of the regular season with one starter hurt and out for the season. I think I would have signed up for that. And so, yes, I wouldn't take the time machine. Now, if you're giving me the time machine and I can go back and redo any dozens of things in my life, well, that's an entirely different podcast. But this season, no, we've talked a lot about the Bengals over the last week or so about how well positioned they are. Okay, well, that takes into account what they were at the beginning of the season. There's no guarantee if we go back in time and do things over that they're going to be as well positioned today to compete for a championship as they are right now. And the idea is to compete for a championship. And so I'm not doing anything that would potentially alter that over the a redo of the first 14 weeks.
This, Mo, has sparked an idea for me. You mentioned a completely different podcast.
Yeah.
I think you have the Mo Egger podcast, which I'm excited for the second season of.
Yeah.
But I think that you have a podcast just called The Worst Decision of My Life. And you have bring on different guests and they tell you and explain the worst decision of their life, why it was so bad, what they were thinking of at the time, the fallout. I think this is fantastic.
Yeah.
That's got a lot of potential.
I have some people who have intersected their lives with mine who we could probably have on.
Would say that choosing to be as close to you as they were would call it the worst decision of their life.
If we could go back in time and the moment you met me, you would have walked out of the room, would you have? Yes. I was thinking you were going to go like we could do a serial podcast called Do-Overs, where I did like 12 episodes on the 12 things I would like to do over most.
Yeah.
12, would there be multiple seasons? Yeah, we'll see if we can get that off the ground.
I like The Worst Decision of My Life. That's a catchy podcast headline that can draw the people in. I like it. Not quite as catchy drawing people in as the Mo Egger podcast, but still very catchy. And I like it. We got to play our game. 40-second clock, three downs with you, of course.
No. Sorry, I sucked at that little exercise. I wasn't ready to give gifts.
No, it's meant to suck. It's a terrible thing to do. It's why I did it.
Mission accomplished.
It's no surprise there. But I, of course, do have our handy-dandy 40-second clock and three downs of three random topics that you are unaware of that you need to hit the post on. You are the time management common sense coach, so you should be able to handle this with relative ease. Mo, are you ready?
I hope can we get a clock graphic on this?
No, we're going to be still doing this again. Okay, yeah, we're going to be doing the phone again. It's way better. Jankier the better. All right, here we go. Topic one is Crosstown Shootout major takeaway.
Better team won. I don't know. I don't know that Xavier's defense is good enough for them to have the sort of season that Musketeer fans are looking for. As for the long-term impact on the Bearcats, if in 6 weeks what they did in the second half proves to be something that they built upon, that's terrific. There's such a finality to that game that it always feels like, God, where do we go from here? I like how the Bearcats bounce back and played against Miami, who's dreadful defensively. This team can't lose before the Houston game. I still think they're the third best team in the American Athletic Conference.
Wow, just nailed under it. The wire. Perfect. Perfect. Well done. Good start. Good first down for you. Mm. The late audible by getting into Miami's dreadful defense at the last second.
Awful.
But I thought it was
they're
well
terrible.
Done.
All right. Travis Steele would tell you that. They're terrible defensively.
All right.
And the metrics second, all say as much. Go ahead.
Second down here for you. Let's go with Major League Baseball's spending spree means what for the local outfit?
I don't know that it means anything because it feels to me like the Reds would have sat this offseason out regardless of what everybody else did. My large sort of takeaway is, what was the point of last year's lockout? Because you're seeing the financial inequity in the sport widen, right? At least in terms of what teams are spending. I thought the lockout that was happening a year ago at this time was supposed to help solve that. It has not. You have owners who are crying poverty and talking about how they hate the current system, locking in players for over a decade. What was the point of last year's lockout? It doesn't make any sense. As for the Reds, they weren't going to do anything this offseason regardless.
Wow. Quick sneaking it in right at the end under the wire. Well done. I would just say the gap widening is obviously awful when you consider the perspective that the local outfit has about how they should be spent.
I don't know how you get people excited about the 2023 season. I mean, we're just going to show highlights of Ellie De La Cruz playing in the minor leagues on the big board at GABB.
There are
a lot of players worth being excited about in the minor leagues, but I mean, how do you get people excited for I asked people at Reds Fest who work for the Reds. I'm like, how you planning on selling this? And the response was,
Dollar beer night.
Worst right, decision of your life. We could get Phil Castellini on. Do you regret sitting next to me on opening day?
Again, another person that should have walked away from you. All right, here we go. Third down. 40 seconds are on the clock. Brady versus Burrow excitement level. Go.
10, because it's not Brady versus Burrow so much as it is the Bengals taking with a chance to take a major step toward winning the AFC North, moving up in the overall AFC standings, and taking a step toward winning a championship. But I'm a big Tom Brady fan. I'm obviously a big Joe Burrow fan. You guys have written about this week. This is the quarterback that Joe Burrow has most often been compared to. I hate the it feels like a torch 10. Passing. But there is an element to that. These two guys juxtaposed against each other is going to be a ton of fun, and I can't wait for the game on Sunday.
Boom. Perfect. 3 for 3. What a pro. Absolute pro you are.
Because we live in this day and age of contrarianism, where if I say, like, if it's a 77-degree day, not a cloud in the sky, and I go, man, what a beautiful day outside. Well, it'd be kind of cool if there were some clouds. So the other day on my show, I said, you know, Tom Brady, I just said this offhand. I didn't turn it into a topic, but I said something to the effect of, you know, it's Brady versus Burrow. Tom Brady, it's one of the more unbreakable modern records in sports because nobody's going to be a quarterback in 11 Super Bowls. Like, sorry. Do I hope Joe Burrow plays in like 15 Super Bowls? Yes. Am I betting against that? Yes. So I just said, I mean, it's remarkable. He's played in 10 Super Bowls, much less one. And I think I was making the point, like, I think Brady's kind of ruined it for all these younger guys, because now if you're like Mahomes or Burrow or Allen or Hurts and you win two, which is a remarkable career, there's going to be this like, yeah, but Brady won seven, because I've watched how we do this with basketball. And so I then do what I shouldn't do. I go home, right? Go home on Tuesday night. I'm having dinner. And I look at my phone, there's Twitter, and I got folks challenging me at the suggestion that nobody's ever going to play quarterback in 11 Super Bowls. Okay, fine. You put your money on a quarterback playing in 11 Super Bowls. I got mine on nobody playing in more than 10. Let's see how this unfolds over the next 15 to 20 years. Like, how do you challenge that? How are you like, well, actually, you know, I think Mahomes can play in nine. He's not going to. It's unbreakable. And then that turns into this stupid conversation about, you know who has the most unbreakable record in sports? Cy Young had 752 complete games. Like, no, modern. Sorry. Just you know, let that statement sit. Nobody's playing in 11.
We have to permanently move you to Thursday. You're much angrier later in the week.
Well, there's been an accumulation of things that happened during the week.
We catch you way too early. I didn't realize that how much this grows as it goes on.
Cathartic.
Yeah. Let's very quickly, so we don't take any more of your time, run through bets. Jay, I know you have some gloating that you want to do.
I do. I hit a parlay finally last week. I went Bengals -6, under 47, and a Chase anytime TD. I put 15 on that and hit it, so I'm back in the positive now. My other parlay was a regular four team, did not hit. Paul put 19 of his 20 units on Jets +9.5. 20-12. He barely got that one, but he won.
A sneaky field goal. Robert Saleh. I see you, son.
And then your one unit was on Bengals Browns over 47. Did not hit. Mo lost 10 units on Vegas -5.5. Tip of the cap to Baker Mayfield. And then Bill, Mo's other bet was a $10 unit future bet on Joe Burrow MVP at +800. So we will wait and see how that one.
I don't like that.
That one took a hit. Yeah. Still time.
And what's funny is I listened to Paul right before the game on the Bengals radio network, and I felt even better.
Yeah.
And then I saw what Jalen Hurts did.
Then Jalen Hurts went and posted like a 50 burger.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go with this. What do you got this week, Mo?
All right, I get odds here, +250, Bengals to win both halves, which means they have to outscore the Buccaneers in the first half and the second half. If they do that, they're obviously going to win the game and most likely cover the number. But I like the value. The Bengals are the better team. And in 2022, they have the better quarterback. Understand, Joe Burrow hasn't accomplished a fraction of what Tom Brady has. We all understand that. Because he's not going to play in 11 Super Bowls.
Why do you hate Tom Brady?
but he is the better quarterback. And so I like this value here. They've got to outscore the Buccaneers by a point in both halves. I think they do +250 Cincinnati to win both halves. I'm going back to a well that I went to 2 weeks ago, which was that Giants Commanders game. I did the under. The game ended in a tie. The New York Giants were throttled last week. Since 2003, teams that lose by 20 or more points cover the next game 55% of the time. Good enough for me. There's no reason for Washington to be laying 4.5 points against an opponent they just tied with. I know they've been better with Taylor Heineke. Their defense is very good. But I'm going to get 4.5 points with a team that Vegas is overreacting to against an opponent against whom they tied. Give me the Giants +4.5. I will go 10 units each.
Okay. My Bengals bet, I'm going under 44. I just, that Tampa Bay defense is legit. And the Tampa Bay offense is just, it's bad right now. It's not just Brady. They can't run the ball. They no explosives. The Bengals defense is playing really well. I see this being a lower scoring game. So I'm going to go 12 on that. I'm going to go 8 on another parlay. Let's stay Stay with it. Try to build this back up. Baltimore plus three at Cleveland. I know Bengal fans are rooting for Cleveland to win that game and the Bengals possibly to jump into first place all by themselves, but I think Baltimore's going to find a way at Cleveland. Going Jets minus one. I don't trust the Lions. The Lions have an incredibly hot defense, terrible defense. Dome teams going on the road in December. I don't have the numbers on that. I can't imagine it's very good. And then Atlanta plus four. Desmond Ritter show. The wild card there. The Saints just have not been impressive at all. I don't know that they win that outright, but I think they can keep it within a field goal.
Okay. I will bet with the trend, and that is the Bengals are an NFL best 10-3 against the spread this year. The Bucs are an NFL worst 3-9-1 against the spread this year. Bengals cover. I'll take that for half. And the other half, Saturdays with three games are just built for three-way parlays, are they not?
Yes.
Why else wouldn't you do this? Vikings minus four versus the Colts, Bills minus seven versus Miami, and Browns on the money line against the Ravens. Jay, we have the early morning flight. We're landing in Tampa at 9 a.m. That sounds like a nice full day of hanging out by the water, watching this very fictional thing come to fruition, and just calling it a nice night.
One of the greatest joys as an NFL fan is that first Saturday when there's games. But if you're going to do this, why not live a little and take the 2 points with the Kerry Combs-led Bearcats in the first ever Wasabi Fenway Bowl?
Yeah,
as Cincinnati and Louisville battle for the keg of nails. If you're going to do this, at least localize a little bit and take
I'll
my
pass.
Beloved Bearcats.
I'll pass.
Against
too many variables. Far too many variables for me to embrace that one.
I mean, I went to practice the other day and like everybody's wearing different numbers. What the hell is going on? Yeah, this is a fascinating sporting event though on Saturday, and I can't wait to watch it.
Mo, this has been fabulous. I look forward to us launching the Worst Decision of My Life podcast. This is going to be the moment where our lives changed because we're going to be rich.
Brady is going to get the ball like minute and a half to go, down four, right? And if he comes through, which one of you is going to be tasked with writing the, you know, teacher gives the mentor a lesson piece?
It's me.
We know that's. And then what is the opposite of like, what is the opposite if he throws like a game ending pick? You're like Cam Taylor Britt picks him off and Brady walks off the field sulking at 45 years old.
That's still me. I'm on Brady watch this week.
Brady? Okay.
Yeah. Brady watch.
I can't wait.
Brady watch right there. I'm pointing in the right direction. Awesome. It's very weird because it's very. That's what I thought. All right.
Brady much like.
Goodbye.
See you guys. Thanks. See ya.
All right, Jay. Deep breath. We got some stuff done in that segment now.
We did. I love the idea. I love the idea of that podcast. My worst decision.
Yes. My worst decision ever. I love it. I mean, imagine anybody. You can go any direction. Celebrities, non-celebrities, just really bad decisions. Like, I'm on board with this.
I'm going to be a little distracted for the rest of the show because there's a lot to go through. What would be the one I would pick?
Can you just do a swath from like your freshman year of high school through your last year at OU? Can you just broad brush that?
I could probably do my worst decision of January 90, my worst decision of February 90. I mean, there's a lot I could go through.
You got to pick from the worst. That's the point of the pod. All right. Speaking of worst decisions, it's Arby's time, Jay. Let's go in. It's any related Bengals insight, extras, and stories. What do you got?
So I found this funny. Yesterday I was walking over to practice, and it's raining, and all the players are standing there waiting for the bus to come get them. So I have to kind of squeeze between them, and I was like, I wonder if I can beat them there. And the bus was pulling in as I approached the indoor facility, and anybody that's ever been through a revolving door knows how long the process can be. So they're all coming off the bus in the rain, and they're just waiting in line in the rain for their turn to go through the line. And I look in, and there's one player standing on the bus, just waiting. Like, I'm not going to go stand in the rain and wait for the revolving door. He waited till the entire line went down and then just shot in there. And it was T. Higgins. And I told him what a veteran move that was. He just kind of chuckled and went in. And I, of course, did not jump in line with the players. I stood in the rain and waited till they were all in there.
I know. I was trying in my head to guess who it would be. I was thinking DJ Reader. DJ Reader feels like I ain't saying no rain type of guy.
Well, he was on the first bus. I don't know if they do offense, defense, how that works, but there was the one bus was already gone and the second bus came. And yeah. And I, for people that know where these, where the indoor facility is in relation to the stadium, it's very close. It's a very easy walk, but you don't want the players out there making that. It's long enough where if they start walking it every day, then you got fans bothering them, chirping at them. So that's why they ride the bus. It's not, I can't believe these professional athletes are too lazy to walk 3/4 of a mile to get to the indoor facility.
All right. That's good. I have it's an extension of a previous Arby's for one of them. And that is, so remember when I talked to you about how Duke Tobin made the joke to me about the game balls and how the personnel staff never gets any of the game balls. This is from 2 or 3 weeks. It was after the Tennessee game when they gave away a million of them. The press conference is over, but I just kind of wanted to give Zach Taylor a hard time. And I was like, so I don't know if there's anybody left in the building that you haven't given a game ball to yet. I said, but what? Because he spent a lot of time in this press conference talking about the personnel staff and how good they had of a job they had done. So what does the personnel staff have to do to get a game ball? I think the only ones that haven't gotten one. And he sort of, you could tell, he was like, oh no, you're putting me on the spot. Like he's been hearing this, right? And he said, you know, somebody's been talking to you. Somebody's been talking to you. You've been seeing something out of practice. And he pointed out like, look, all those Tennessee game balls haven't been given out yet. So, you know, give me time. I think he was hedged. I think he was backpedaling hard. He's been hearing it. And backpedaling pretty hard. I said it might be time to start giving out game balls in free agency or the draft season. Because if they're not going to get any at this time of year when Trenton Irwin helps save your season, I don't know when else they're supposed to get one. But hard backpedal from Zach Taylor when I pressed him on it. And he knew I knew something.
Well, and he knows it's on video, so I wouldn't be surprised if he says personnel staff in the post, the next win, the next post-game celebration.
Next win, you know, you got to feel like it's going to go directly to everybody on the personnel staff that's there. The other one I wanted to point out was this happened. I mean, there's always a lot of these. I mean, we remember games where idiots like that, Jay. We remember so many games from the past. Bucks-Bengals have a great lineage of outstanding ridiculousness. The Justin Smith coddle game happened.
Coddle him to the ground.
Coddle him to the. What am I supposed to do? Coddle him to the ground. The unsportsmanlike roughing the passer that cost them a game in Tampa. The Andy Dalton vomit fest in 2014, where he was really sick and played terrible the first half, and he was like vomiting into garbage cans in the tunnel, and then he came back and battled back in the second half for a 14-13 win. The last game in Cincinnati was the Flamis Winston, 4 interceptions, then the wild comeback, and then the final connection, essentially, of the Andy Dalton and A.J. Green era, where A.J. got hurt winning the game in the final seconds for them, and he never really kind of ever recovered. He didn't really come back the rest of the year, and then he hurt himself at the beginning of the next year, and he was never really the same. It was kind of the last big moment of Andy and A.J. and of that season.
There was also way back in the 90s, the Buccaneers came to Cincinnati and beat the Bengals 35-0, and Carl Pickens danced and sang off the field, "This is it." I mean, he knew it was over. He was ready to get out of town, and it was an ugly, ugly game. And then even that preseason game with the Joseph Osai game in the preseason, there's been some very, very, for teams that only play every 4 years, there's been some good history.
Okay, we'll see. Maybe it will continue on Sunday. So let's talk about that game a little bit. Jay, deciding factor for you, what's it going to come down to?
I think pressure on Brady. He's obvious. No quarterback likes to get hit, but his production definitely goes down when he's getting hit, when he's got guys in his face. That offense, it's just, I mean, Mike Evans, Julio Jones, yes, he's older, but they should be much more productive, and they're not. And I feel like if the Bengals can get pressure on Brady, and even if they're not getting sacks, just force the checkdowns, that offense, there's no explosion in that Tampa Bay offense. And I feel like Burrow and the Bengals offense is good enough to put up some points. And if they can hold Tampa Bay in that, you know, 21 or below, they'll be in good shape to win the game.
Yeah, I mean, that's always it, right, with Brady? It's it's hit all the way back to when their teams were cooking. You know, the only thing that kept them from winning the Super Bowl was if you could hit them. And even more so now. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think that's going to be the key. Guys like Reader, guys like Hubbard, I mean, those guys are going to have to make a big impact. And, you know, Vita Vea, will he play in this game? I don't know. Doesn't sound like it. I mean, that's big because he's so disruptive up the middle, and he could really be a problem. The Bengals should be able – I think to move the ball, but it's really going to just be about, I think there's going to be a Tennessee-ish game plan here. Mm-hmm. You know, you're still just a team that struggles offensively. Just don't hand them points. Keep it relatively safe. Take your checkdowns, you know, take the points, things like that. And don't focus so much on trying to be super aggressive or anything like that. Don't turn it over. And that really, you know, the Tennessee, the Pittsburgh game plans, I think those kind of play out here more than your Kansas City game plan, which was get off the bus trying to score points.
Yeah, and the other thing, I mean, I agree that that's going to be the game plan, but the difference with Tennessee and Tampa Bay has the number 32 rushing offense in the league. Yeah. And even if you don't want to go by total yards, you want to go by DVOA, they're 30th. They just cannot run the ball. And the Bengals with Reader back are really, really good at stopping the run. That's why I think this could be a game where you see Brady drop back 50 times. And and he's going to have to dink and dunk his way down the field. Going to be interesting to see how often he goes at Cam Taylor-Britt. You know, Lou Anarumo talked about how much he sees a rookie out there. He starts licking his fingers and goes at him. And this could just be a continuation for Cam Taylor-Britt of building on what he did last week.
Absolutely could be. You know, Brady, the last 2 weeks, Jay, 54 passes against New Orleans, 55 passes against San Francisco.
He can't run it.
43 against Cleveland in week 12. In week 9, 58 passes against the Rams in a win. It's all they've got. I mean, he's been over, outside of a game against Seattle where he was 22 of 29, he's been over 40 every week since week 3, and he's been over 50 four times. Five times. I mean, that's wild.
Yeah.
That is absolutely wild.
The 49ers game makes sense because they were getting blown out 35-7. The Saints game was a tight game, and it came down to a final classic Brady drive. But yeah, to throw it that many times in a game that's that tight, that shows you what they think of their run game.
And now what are you starting to see? You're starting to see, you know, the wear and tear on that. Now you're seeing interceptions from Brady, which you just don't see. He's got 4 in the last 4 weeks. I mean, you talk about things that don't happen. He always gets to 10 wins, and he doesn't throw interceptions, and you're seeing it all kind of fall apart. But just when you think things are falling apart, it's on to Cincinnati, isn't it, Jay? So better watch yourself. All right, let's get into it. Growler bet. Bengals Growler Bet. Of course, you can send that hashtag Bengals Growler Bet on Twitter or send me an email, pdaner@theathletic.com, with your answer with the word growler somewhere in your subject header. The funnier, the better. We've been giving good shout outs. There's been some really good ones. Thank you to those that have been, which last week, did I do the shout out for you?
I don't think you did. No.
You don't live in Growler. I liked for the Battle of Ohio last week. I liked that. There was like a couple other really good ones that I won't say. but I appreciated them. I certainly appreciate it. So keep them coming. All right. I think we're going to keep it simple this week for the growler bet this week, aren't we?
Simple and obvious.
Simple and obvious. It's going to be Tom Brady versus Joe Burrow passer rating. Pick your pony and the differential. Tom Brady versus Joe Burrow passer rating differential. Pick your pony and the number. What do you think, Jay?
Yeah, I just think if Brady's going to be throwing that many times, there's going to be more chances for there to be picks. There's not going to be a lot that it's going to be a lot of shorter passes that leads to a lower passer rating. I think Burrow's going to win this pretty easily. I'm going to go Burrow by 33.3.
Do you know how many times Brady has been over 100 passer rating this year?
I'll say three.
Two times. The Seattle game where he only threw the 29 passes, 22 to 29 for 258. And then a loss to Kansas City, 41-31, where he was 39 of 52 for 3 touchdowns and no interceptions. That's it. You know how many times Joe Burrow has been over 100?
10?
7.
Okay.
7. He's had a couple that are in those 90s. But seven times over 100 passer rating. Pretty much every game he doesn't throw an interception, almost. So for that fact, I'm gonna say Burrow by 22.4. That's my answer.
22.4. Okay.
Burrow by plus 22.4. All right. So at Paul Daner, at P Daner at the Athletic, P Daner at the Athletic. I can say it. I know I can get there. and hashtag Bengals Growler Bet on Twitter. Give us your answer by kickoff on Sunday. And some delicious 50 West beer can be yours. Look forward to that. We're going to need to get out there again soon, Jay.
Yes. Maybe a playoff preview.
My brain and my texts have been moving lately on that. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to say. The wheels are in motion. Things are happening. Seinfeld reference for you. Okay. Let's go run passer boot. Jay, you got a pretty good. I think this is pretty good.
Yeah. Brady centric. What comes first in the game? A Brady interception, a Brady gets sacked, or a Brady touchdown pass?
Okay. The last 4 games, he has been sacked 5 times, thrown 4 interceptions, and 9 touchdowns. So I'm going to run with Brady touchdown. I am going to pass on Brady sack, and I'm going to boot Brady pick.
Yeah, I booted the pick as well, but I flipped the other two. I think that it's going to be interesting to see if they stick with the 4-man rush and just try to get pressure on him, or if they try to blitz Brady. I mean, you mentioned it, that it's dangerous, but yeah. If you start hitting him early and you have faith in your offense that even if he gets you on 1 or 2 early, it's not going to be a shootout game. This isn't going to be a high-scoring Tampa Bay offense, and you have faith in the Burrow and the Bengals offense can come back from an early deficit. It wouldn't stun me to see Lou dial up some pressure early just to kind of send a message. So I'm going to run with the sack, pass on the touchdown pass, and boot the pick.
All right. We chalk those up. We will come back after those next week and check in how they went. Let's get into prediction, Jay. What do you got?
Yeah, I keep going back to it. I don't think that the Buccaneers can score a lot. They do have a really good defense, and I think that the Bengals are going to struggle to get a lot of points. I see it being a low-scoring game. The Andy Dalton puke fest was 14-13. If I remember, the coddle to the ground game might have been 14-13 as well. That was a really low-scoring game. Seems like when they go to Tampa, those are the games they play. A little bit higher scoring this time. I'm going Bengals 20, Buccaneers 16.
2016, you're one of the same score as the Tennessee game, I see. Tennessee game plan. Okay. I think the Bengals will score some, though. I mean, I know, I just think their offense, it doesn't really matter who's on the other side. They're gonna find a way to get some, no matter who. I mean, we'll see with T and TB and how this all plays out. They still got Jamar. Their running game's going really well, especially no Vea hurts them. So, I mean, the last five games on this five-game win streak, the Bengals have scored at least 20 every single time. And, you know, they've been 42, 37, 20, 27, 23. The Bucs, over the last five games, have 16, 21, 17, 17, 7. Hmm. These are, let's take away the names. Let's take away the history. Let's take away everything else. Two teams, blank slates. You know, the Bengals are just so much the better team. They're playing so well right now. You know, Brady can make things happen. And certainly, you know, the things like the wild comeback against New Orleans are the only things keeping them from a three-game losing streak. I don't see Joe Burrow opening the door like the Saints did. I don't, you know, they're just playing too well. I think they're playing at a level right there along with San Francisco right now, who just took them behind the woodshed last week. I don't know that they're going to take them behind the woodshed, but I do think they're going to win. I think it'll be handily. Bengals 28, Bucks 17 is my final. All right. I want to say thanks, everybody, for listening to that part of the podcast. As we've finished, wrapped, talking about all things Bengals Bucks. We'll have the walkout, of course, from Tampa on Sunday night. Wrap that up for you. No live room on Monday because we'll be traveling back in the process of doing all that, getting back from Florida. So, but we'll have walkout. We'll be waiting for you for your consumption. Now, spoiler alert, the most important part of the podcast that four of you have been, five of you have been desperately waiting for. The rest of you, have a good one, everybody. It's Survivor Talk time, Jay. The finale was last night. Before we get into the finale, what was your overall thoughts on the season? Top percentile, middle, or bottom? Top third, middle third, bottom third, all time for you? Because you've never missed an episode.
I have not ever. It's hard to rank them because there's so many now and they all go together. And I would say definitely top third, maybe top eighth. It was really, really good. It started slow. And, you know, we talked about this yesterday in the media room, how they're more focused on the character development now. And you're starting to see them do the things they never used to do, where it's almost like the American Idol thing where they show pictures of their past and kind of give you a glimpse into who they were before they came on the show. And I think that's an important element as the season goes on. There weren't as many wow moments. Last week, obviously there was that, the Jesse knocking out Cody was huge. That was great. And Cody's reaction was great. But overall, not really getting a feel for where things were going. I used to play in a Survivor League, and you would predict the boot each week. And if I had to do that this year, I doubt I would have got too many right. A lot of them kind of surprised me. So for that aspect of it, I really did enjoy it. I thought it was a top tier season overall.
As hard charging up the rankings as a last four episodes can be.
Yeah.
Like it was very good. I was liking the season. It was very totally good. Like it was great. But the last four episodes were just outstanding on every level. I mean, that was one of the most interesting. I usually hate the final tribal where they're pleading their case and the questions are being asked. Oftentimes it feels, you know, like it's already been decided and it's over and it's just a matter of function. Here it turned the tide and you got to finally hear this like great Gabler story and Alla Gabler and like all the stuff from him about the game that he played and why it maybe was a lot better than people were giving it credit for. And then to have it be a near unanimous vote for him, where I thought it was Cass's in the bag coming into too. It. And I think she, you know, I think he talked his way into it. And she talked her way out of it, not understanding that her biggest move wasn't even her move. that it was ride or die, right? I mean, that was a major malfunction in her, for her. Maybe $1 million screw up in claiming that as her major move. And so, but I, you know, what happened with Jesse, like the whole Jesse, from the moment he, you know, turned the screws on Cody till his elimination on the fire making, like his raw emotion that he played with, how much it meant, like that is stirring television, man. That is, I don't care. Talk about reality TV, talk about sitcoms, talk about dramas, talk about movies. It doesn't matter. That is truly stirring television to watch him in those in all of those moments, really run the roller coaster of emotions that he went through, and then the realization at the end, and to get Gabler giving all his money to the veterans. Yeah. Like I loved everything about these last few episodes. I wish it could have been the best season ever if like the middle that middle three pack of like when they went from about the merge to about 8-7, like there was no action. Those were really dull. They were too dull. There wasn't a whole lot of action. If they could have gotten more motivated, more action to happen in the middle, this could have been one of the best seasons there's ever been. But it was certainly one of the best finishes, the last string of episodes we've ever seen. And congrats. Like, it was cool watching Gabler kind of come up there and get the win at the end.
Yeah, I did not watch the reunion show. As soon as they announced the winner, I turned it off. And so I haven't seen that part. Two things. The you're right, the Jesse emotion, it was stirring. And a lot of people, and you saw Owen do this when he got beat, when Carla beat him to the advantage, and just the anger and throwing stuff. And he, as a former gang member, I thought would just be pissed and in that moment and kind of have that explosion. And it wasn't. It was all sunken in and withdrawn and just within himself and the tears and what it meant. And it's like, You almost want to like put your arm around me, like, look, buddy, it's gonna be okay. You've got out of that life. You have a PhD. It's not gonna be as easy now without $1 million, but your kids are gonna be fine. They're still gonna have a good life. Just seeing him internalize that so raw, it was hard. And I would love if they would do this, if they would have them vote before the final tribal council. Like, yeah. Who are you going to give the money to? And then when they have the final tribal, see how many people flip on their vote by the way that the case is presented. Because I didn't think Gabler had a chance until he started talking. And when he said, no one wrote my name down all season, you could see everybody in the jury's like, oh my God, right. That's right. I thought that was a huge turning point in the whole final tribal.
Yeah, no question. There was that point in that dead zone was really when it was like, remember we joked about the forearm shakes with the ride or die guys. And it was like, man, Gabler's starting. Like he really did a really nice job maneuvering through and making some nice plays in that middle area. And then he disappeared, right? You know, and then comes to point out at the end, all part of the strategy, because threat management. Like Jesse made the big moves he had to make, but inevitably he ended up being too big of a threat at the very end to be sitting there. And that's it. Threat management all the way to get yourself to three is the hardest part of this game, because you can applaud somebody for the game they're playing, but the moment you applaud is when they've screwed it up.
Yep.
That's the beauty of the game and how fun it is to watch dynamics. So thanks to everybody for that. You know, it's been great talking to the five of you here for the last few minutes about Survivor, and it was a fun season. Now we got to wait all the way till March for it to happen again. So the free agent season podcast and draft season is going to, we're going to drop some extra Survivor talk into the end of that for season 44. Medical emergencies return, Jay. You didn't get to see that, but medical emergencies return next season, apparently.
Ooh. So they've already filmed it.
Yes.
Oh yeah, I guess
they showed highlights of it. Yeah, they do them. They do them back to back. They shoot them back to back. Okay. All right. Thanks everybody for listening. We will talk to you next from Tampa after the Bengals play the Bucks in Burrow Brady 1. So have a good one, everybody.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.